So after last week or the week before or something, we talked about rage and anger, especially anger toward injustice or toward wrongdoing. And in a way, the conversation feels like it has this undertone that I hear come out at different times in a few different topics, but this is one of them that it comes often, where the question behind the question is something like, is this experience that I'm having okay? Or is this experience that I'm having allowable within this tradition? Or is it considered to be good within this tradition or okay within this tradition? And sometimes I wonder if this is a product of the kind of convert process, where like I wasn't raised within Buddhism, I love it, but like maybe I'm a little insecure still around my belonging in it, such that I might ask the question like, oh, this thing just feels authentic to me, but maybe I've heard that it's not a good thing in this system. And there's a kind of doubt in it. So I think this can sometimes be there. And then there's a side of the question that is, I think, even within the historical bodies of material we have, the texts and traditions that have come down through various lineages, a clear place of some churning or some controversy. I don't know if it's controversy until it gets closer to the modern period, but certainly some charge around like, what about strong emotions, strong charged feelings? And so then this feeling that we most often hear this question around, I most often hear the question around, in a way, the two great poisons that in early Buddhism would be translated as lust or greed and like hatred or aversion, anger or aversion. And the question comes up in a certain way, like in relation to lust or greed, like what about the kind of desire that's like a love for life or a love for the wholesome sensual pleasures? Is that okay? And then in relation to aversion or ill will, it comes up in relation to like, what about righteous anger? What about the appropriate response to injustice? And I think in both cases, there's a way that I wonder if I might say, like, European and American culture has grown into a certain relationship with strong feeling that's still being worked through, and that when folks come into something like Buddhism or some of the ancient non-Western contemplative practices, they are encountering a system that is not the home ground for the working through that they're in. That's a complicated way of saying something like, what if these questions are rooted in people still being in recovery from like Christianity or Judeo-Christianity as a system, as systems sometimes based in like sin and redemption, guilt, shame? Certainly the Catholicism I was raised in had a very clear sense that, like doing some things or even thinking some things was just wrong and you should feel guilty and you should confess that and ask for forgiveness, seek for forgiveness in your heart. We were a fairly progressive Catholic church, so it wasn't even about like go to confession with the priest, but it was like, that's a sin, you seek forgiveness. But the implied sticky back end is like, that's wrong and you feel guilty. And of course I absorbed some of that. So then I find Buddhism, there's no God to judge me. That was very satisfying, total relief. But then they're like, you know, anger is a defilement and should be eliminated. And I'm like, oh, is that just another way of saying it's a sin that I should not have happen? That's not satisfying, especially because it happens all the time and I can't seem to get rid of it. And let's not even start talking about lust, you know, the unuprootable, you know, force. So I suspect that some of the dissonance is cultural, that there's just a collision of like unresolved material from one culture meeting ethical and kind of purification teachings from another culture and really just not communicating in a certain way. Part of this we can, as always, start with anyway, in a way that might be useful, translation issues. Because very often the question around anger comes up around anger, like the emotion of anger. You know, I watch the hearings, I get angry, right? But if we kind of, if we're like, okay, what is that state? What am I actually feeling? It's like, well, there's a kind of uplift of force, and maybe there's heat, maybe there's restlessness, like there's a kind of sort of energy. There's judgment, which is a kind of discernment, like I'm making an ethical judgment. I'm like, the thing these people are doing is wrong, and I feel that forcefully. But discernment is a wholesome quality in the Buddhist system, so that's not wrong. And having strongly held ethical views, if they're in accord with the precepts, is wholesome. And being passionately devoted to ethical practice and discipline is wholesome. So then what's unwholesome here? And so then I go back to the text and I'm like, well, what is this actually an experience that is, you know, breaking a precept, or is this the defilement? The defilement, if we think about the three great poisons as one of the models for, like, you know, stuff that hurts you and others to avoid, we often say greed, hatred, and delusion. So that second term, this is the aversion term. Like, I see something that I don't like, I want to push it away. Aversion is one version of that. But the term in the defilements is really, it's not ever translated as anger. It's translated as hatred or ill will. And they both have this particular charge, not just of that kind of strong, forceful discernment of recognizing something unethical, but they have a quality of directed malice. Like, I wish that another being was in pain. I wish to hurt. That's hatred or ill will. Right? Ill will is really the opposite of metta, where metta wishes that someone would be safe and happy. Ill will or hatred wishes that someone would be unhappy and suffer. So then there's a question. I'm watching unethical patriarchal behavior on full display, and I'm having feelings. Now I want to ask, this feeling that I'm having, what is it wishing for? What am I actually wanting with this feeling? Is this a wish that those men would hurt? Or is it a wish that they would stop causing harm? Or something else? What actually is this thing that I'm calling anger? And I want to do this analysis because at the heart of the teaching on wise effort that this is all based in, the practice is to encourage the wholesome states and discourage the unwholesome states. That's fine. But then I have to know which is which. What is this feeling? There's a quality that arises in the descriptions of dedicated practice called, the Pali term is samvega. And I never hear lay people preach on it. Monastics preach on it a lot. It's, you could translate it or gloss it as something like passionate, intense devotion to practice. Not just like really wanting to practice for the liberation of all, but like get to the bottom of it, kind of forceful practice. And it's considered a very wholesome state to have. Because, you know, the path is hard and it takes some shakti to get through it, to borrow a term from a parallel tradition. It takes some force. We would say virya, it takes heroic force to confront or to become intimate with how deep suffering goes, how deep the defilements are. So what if there's you know, rage at a certain kind of injustice, discernment of unethical behavior, compassion for those being harmed, and a kind of heroic or warrior effort in practice to try to purify the mind and create the conditions for well-being for others? Is that a defilement? So, after the last talk on defilements, or the last talk on rage, some nice Facebook threads unfolded. And I got to cross in conversation several people that I really respect and adore having bits of conversation with on Facebook, including, and this is really just, this was a highlight of my week. I'm willing to say that that part of that was with Rebecca Solnit, who's one of my absolute heroes right now, and talking about like, yeah, what about, you know, what about anger and rage in this context? And she quoted one of the amazing teachers, Buddhist teachers right now, Joan Halifax, talking about this. Wonderful teacher down at the Upaya Zen Center in New Mexico. And talking with Krista Tippett, so it was just really like, oh my God, amazing people thread. And part of what those threads pointed to was in some ways how useful it might be to map out, in a sense, some of the variants or some of the different qualities that might come under the umbrella of anger, let's say, some of which would fall under the kind of wholesome side of the spectrum. In other words, like forceful concern based in compassion, right? Could be a kind of anger. And, you know, certainly like the self-protective impulse. Anger is the emotion that's associated with the fight side of the fight, flight, freeze spectrum. So arising in the nervous system when there's threat, and arising as a wholesome or appropriate response to threat, mobilizing the musculature to defend oneself or one's loved ones or the earth. So in that sense, fight as a kind of self-protective instinct, we could understand as being in a certain way primarily based in compassion. Right? This is loving kindness meeting the present moment that contains suffering and expressing as compassion. But compassion doesn't have to be this kind of squishy, removed, like, oh, I'm so sorry you're suffering. Right? That's kind of yucky. I mean, maybe it's lovely. Yeah, you know, it depends how it's moved, right? How it manifests. And it's different to be a state that I'm cultivating in deep meditation versus a state that's actually motivating me or moving my actions in the world. So what if there's like if we think of a spectrum of states, energetic states, emotional states, that are going to be the basis of actions, where there's a quality that threads through all of them that has, if we go with the basic, almost neutral quality of there's something unpleasant happening and I feel an aversion to it, right? I want to push against it in some way. With that as the basic tone, we could say that there's wholesome actions based in a kind of compassion, protection. And then there's unwholesome actions that would then be the side where you would get the, like, malice, ill will, hatred. Yeah? So, like, oh, I don't like that something's happening. There's so many different ways that I could respond to that. You know, I could like, try to protect the victims. I could try to make a boundary. I could try to hurt those that are doing something. And so, if I think about it in this way, it feels like it makes it possible for me to lean into those responses that that feel wholesome in me, and to welcome their force, to welcome forceful, compassionate action, but to be on the alert for its slipping into hatred, right? To not hate the enemy. Even in a certain way, not to make enemies of the enemy, even though, you know, you want to stop somebody from doing something. This becomes, though, it loops back then into the practice of metta. It's going to really just become, once again, the loving kindness practice. Because if I'm working on cultivating the intention toward non-harming or toward non-ill will. Let's leave harming out of it for a moment. We'll go with ill will. Stay in the spectrum. I'm working on cultivating the quality of non-ill will without losing the qualities of discernment and compassion and my own virya, my own force. Then in a way, we're cultivating this mix of like loving kindness winning out over hatred, discernment winning out over delusion. Like, I need to be able to tell the difference. Like, what is wholesome here? This is an ethical analysis in a way, and really asks me to see what's happening with a very clear mind. Say, like, oh, is this is harmful? And then to just notice some way. I think this is a place for me personally, and I'm curious to hear from you. I think the place for me personally that it slips again and again is something like I don't like what's happening. I know that it's wrong. I feel powerless, and therefore I hate them. For me, I feel like, oh, because there are situations where I'm like, I see what's happening, I know that it's wrong, there's something I can do. And when I do something, it changes. I feel like I'm participating in some way. Maybe this is a talk that ends with, like, vote, people, at least, and then keep working on all the other things that need to be done. But what if hating or ill will comes in part from a feeling that, like, there's nowhere else my force can go other than in, like, the desire to harm. Like, that's the only tool I have in my book, rather than, like, oh, there's so many ways I could respond to what's happening. So that's, I'm speculating there. I'm curious. But I notice that when hatred or ill will arises in me, it's often in these situations where something is happening, and the one that I hate, I feel both powerless to intervene against, so there's some freeze, and there's a kind of what is it? It's like, there's a little bit of thread of, like, I've just given up on them as people, right? Like oh, they can't be saved. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing skillful to be done here. Mm-hmm. And And when I connect with that image, it's just painful. I'm like, oh, I would never want to do that. You know, if I could actually, if I could actually meet, like, face to face, you know, on a walk in the woods, far away from any cameras or microphones, on a quiet autumn day, Mitch McConnell, and far away from the comics who make fun of him for looking like a turtle, and far away from the Senate where he's struggling to do something that I don't understand, that feels so hurtful. Like, what would I do? What would I say? How could I be able to respond to this human being who suffers? And I think that in that sense, the antidote, and this is the traditional antidote to ill will, is metta, right? They're just opposites. So if you can keep loving, I suspect then what happens is you don't fall into the powerless place. Like, oh, there's always something you can do if you don't close the heart off. So I called this series of talks Torted Enraged Buddhism, which is a pun on Torted Engaged Buddhism, which was a title of something a while back. But Torted Enraged Buddhism, just some proposal that we must, I think, as folks who care and want to be engaged, who are not renunciate monastics, we must have access to our own force in the world. But that the Buddhist system can actually offer a more refined or wise practice in relation to our own force that is different from how it's expressed in the larger system, where hatred and ill will are actually lauded and celebrated on all sides of a conflict. So any of your thoughts here, reflections? Yeah.
As I think about it, I think about empowerment and clarity and keeping the heart open versus my anger. I feel as though, for me, anger in my experience has had along with it the mind-raising an enemy image of the object of my anger, and that's one thing. And also repeatedly in my life, when I've acted, when I'm sure I'm in discernment and I'm right and I'm angry, there is an over-sureness that I'm right. Mm-hmm. And I think that there can be empowerment and clarity and courage without my dipping into that delusion that anger does with me.
Yeah. That's such a delicate place, because this practice relies on discernment to orient me toward what would be a wise action. But the hotter the anger, the more discernment might be a suspect.
Yeah, right? And if I'm angry, I don't have that clarity. Yeah. Somebody else would have to give it to me.
Yeah.
And if I'm in the room with somebody who's attacking me, this is great. I've got the power and I don't have... You know, I can have my prefrontal cortex blocked. I can act completely from the amygdala.
Appropriate.
But if it's in anything that's more complex than direct self-protection, then I feel as though, in my experience, in my life, I've needed more clarity than just the rage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I've been embarrassed, you know. I've been so sure of something and I act. And then afterwards, oh my God, you know, I did that to this nice person. I was completely wrong.
Yep. Yep. Done that. Yep. What else?
I actually had a very similar talk about this with my therapist yesterday morning, and he, it was kind of in relation to, like, I was, I don't know if reminiscing is the right word, but remembering when I was younger and, like, mean to my mother, like, you know, as a 16-year-old and trying to, like, understand why, like, where that anger came from and, like, what I was trying to do and how that may have, like, carried on to the rest of my life. And we kind of came up with this similar conclusion where he started talking about Freud, and I won't get into it, but he used this word libidinal, which is kind of, like, I guess the technical term for this, like, inner drive that most people probably have to just, that, like, propels them to, you know, express themselves or be an agent or, like, you know, be a force in the world that isn't just, like, reactive and passive.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, the healthy and maybe, like, wholesome way to deal with that drive is exactly what you're saying, is to find a way that where it doesn't involve hatred. It's more of a, you know, how can you make that productive and creative rather than destructive?
Yeah. At the very least, like, destroy the right things.
Or, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, there's some way that, like, we're partly talking about, like, how do I channel my own force, my own energy for doing, for creating, in a way that helps rather than hurts. And then if we go back to the word that kind of kicked all of this off, which is the word rage. What's wholesome rage? What does that feel like or look like? Is there a rage on the wholesome side of this spectrum? Or what is rage without hatred?
Mm-hmm.
Can we do that?
The examples that I'm hearing in here, maybe they do have to do with rage, but to me, I'm like, well, that's anger, that's not rage, and that's not for me to say, but I'm having that strong response.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really feel it until I sat down in the room, how much, in fact, I was deliberating whether I was going to stay for the talk, and I basically was like, I'm going to stay for this talk, only to pass on my rage. And then you said, we're going to talk about rage, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And the way that I'm feeling rage, and that I think it's a nourishing way to carry rage, is currently has to do with the policies that are being signed over to make laws eliminating transgender and gender non-conforming people. And I haven't really been able to feel it much because I've been preoccupied with too much. And so I think when I sat down, I'm finally feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I'm feeling rage right now is my own rage, but it's also the rage of the whole community of people that are going to be affected way more than I am. And something that is speaking to me strongly about this topic of rage is the way that rage is coming from something that is old and deep and desperate and that doesn't need to get listened to. And so those of us that are then an extension of that community who's going to be directly, potentially will be, you know, if it's passed directly, their lives so drastically harmed by it, carry that rage for them. And I think when I came into this room, just to be honest and transparent, it's like I'm sitting down for the first time with a moment in a place that often brings up like vulnerability around isolation or not belonging or something, just for all the reasons that it does, and feeling like no one here has to carry that rage with me. And I don't know if that's true or not, but there's something to rage that is old and deep and has to do with wounding that's not in the immediate. And it's not like an angry response. That's the way that I, you know, experience rage. And, you know, I'm like, in some way, I've been just sitting with rage through this sit, and it's literally just mourning how much woundedness there is. Mm-hmm. And it's angry as fuck, mm-hmm. but it's not, mm-hmm. It's not hard and it's not defensive. But in some way, you know, I'm wanting to, like, pass my rage on and be like, y'all carry this. Mm-hmm. Have you been carrying this? Mm-hmm. And then one other thing that's, like, speaking through the rage is this week I've been having to do a lot of speaking for my cohort in the school that I'm in and directly confronting administration for some extremely wrongdoings. And again, I feel like I'm kind of carrying a lot of anger for a lot of people that will be more affected than I am, but I'm affected as well. And I've been speaking through anger. And I, not once though, but it's coming from rage, you know, from wrongdoing and rage, and from stuff that's so old, it's like touching into wounding that's so old, it's not what's right here. And I think that in speaking, like you were talking about not speaking at that anger moment, and I just want to push back on that, because for me, I'm like, no, in that moment of speaking through that anger, there's a position of power and authority, and it's being abused, you know, there's this, like, needing to express our anger and push back up against this kind of oppressive force, you know, that's being put down on us. And we just had a meeting a couple days ago that was a lot of us, and I spoke through, you know, it's not like I'm shouting in anger, but, you know, letting her know, the president, the anger that's there. And I feel very, like, strongly at this moment in my life that expressing through rage is powerful, and that, you know, it is a question whether or not you have the availability to you to actually be silent when that moment of anger, because sometimes that's not a luxury, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad you're here. In whatever way it's helpful. And I'm just honored toward, in the way that you're describing, you're playing, being in that role for your community in these multiple ways. So, we'll continue next week. We'll talk about metta. We'll loop back into the foundations, in a way, of heart practice. In a way, carrying the whatever it is for each of us, the challenge of this realm of anger, rage, protectiveness. And keep practicing. So thank you for being here. Lovely to see everyone. Thank you for speaking and sharing and listening to each other. Please vote. Tell all your friends and people everywhere. And may everyone, in whatever way possible, find peace and the conditions for peace and safety in this world. Thank you for your generosity. supporting this group and my work in the studio by giving what you can. My gratitude to you for that. Thanks for a little consult on how to do that in the wild online world. See you next week. Take good care till then.
Thank you.